What I wanted to do with you today is the sugya that I wanted to... What's your name?
Matis.
Matis. You were here once before, Nachum?
I was not.
Never before? Huh? No, there wasn't. Could there be another guy in it? Sorry?
Said when I heard good things.
Where are you from?
Chicago.
Matis Goldberg?
Goldmeyer.
Goldmeyer. Ah, shalom. And?
Zvi Rosenberg.
Zvi Rosenberg. And where are you from?
Baltimore.
Oh, shalom. Okay, everyone got sheets. This is the sugya that I wanted to learn with you, Erev Yom Ha'atzmaut, but unfortunately I got held up in a terrible traffic jam in Netanya, and so I didn't make it. And the question is, how can religious Jews support a non-religious state? A Rav Kook deals in general on a philosophical basis on how to look at non-religious Jews. But bit pashtut, as soon as something is non-religious, that's problematic for us as religious Jews. And especially the state of Israel, which isn't exactly run according to halacha. And what we want to do today is the mikorot of how to look at a non-religious Jewish state. Okay? Now, before we look at the mikorot, let me ask you, what do we celebrate on Hanukkah? If I were to ask you, what are the two classic answers why we celebrate Hanukkah?
The war and the religion.
Okay. First of all, there was the war of the Rabbim Biad Me'atim. Okay. What do you mean the religion?
That we were able to keep it.
Okay.
Yafeh. Really.
Okay. And what else do they teach us in...
The oil lasted
for 8 days. Yafeh, those are the classic answers. What we're going to see in the Rambam is he stresses a totally different aspect of Hanukkah. Let's see it inside. In source one, the Bayit Sheni, during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, Keshem Malchei Yavan Gazru Gzerot al Yisrael, the Greek kings issued decrees against Israel, Ubitlu datam v'lo inichu otam lasok b'toav mitzvot. Like Matis said, they didn't let us practice our religion. Upashtu yadam b'mamonam u'bivnotehem. They took away our money. They took away our daughters. Want to pass this? Oh, say there. Tada. V'niknasu le'echal u'partzu bo pratzot v'timu ha'te'arot. They defiled the Mikdash. V'tzar lehem li'Yisrael mod mipnehem. V'lachatzum lachatz gadol. They oppressed the Jews very much. Ad shirichem aliyem Elohei avoteinu v'oshiyam mi'adam v'yitzilam. Till HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the God of our fathers, had mercy and saved us. V'gavru b'nei chashmonai ha'kohanim ha'gdolim v'aragum, v'oshiu Yisrael mi'adam. And the Maccabees, Shalom Aleichem, from the family of the Kohen Gadol, were victorious. V'eminu melech min ha'kohanim, and they set up a king from the Kohanim. V'chazra malchut li'Yisrael yeter al-matayim shanim ara churban ha'sheni. And sovereignty returned to Israel for more than 200 years until the Churban. Now, if I were to ask you, how would the Rambam answer that question? What do we celebrate on Chanukah? In addition to what you... First of all, regarding the Nes Pach HaShemen, notice the Rambam doesn't mention it here. He mentions it later. That's a secondary issue. We also know you don't say Halil on a miracle unless it's a salvation. So the salvation... That the Rambam does mention. But he takes it a step further. Anybody notice in the last sentence, what does the Rambam point out? Chazra Malchut L'Yisrael. Sovereignty returned to Israel. In other words, if the Rambam were alive today, in modern Hebrew, he might very well call Chanukah, how do you say sovereignty? Self-rule in Hebrew? Yom Ha'atzmaut. Yom Ha'atzmaut. Right? Self-rule, according to the Rambam, is something very important. Now, we're not naive, and when we discuss the modern state of Israel, we know that there are basically two reasons for those who oppose the state of Israel. You could divide them up between the Neturei Karta and Agudat Yisrael. What's the difference between the two groups? What's the complaint of the let's start with Agudat Yisrael, because they're the majority. It's not religious. Okay? Agudat Yisrael, I would say, is about 95% of the anti-Zionists within what's called the Haredi camp. And to the extent that the State of Israel helps yeshivot, they're willing to take money. They're willing to take money from Bituach Le'umi. They vote in elections. As a matter of fact, they have the highest rate of voting of any population in the country. The joke is the Haredim vote more than 100%. How could you have more than 100%? Because just like in the Arab villages, when women cover themselves up, it's hard to recognize them. So even people who died, they still use their tudot zehut to keep on voting. So within the Haredi community, the joke is, all Haredim look alike, so they can vote again. But it's almost 100%, because if the Rosh Hashiva, if the Hasidic Rebbe says you have to go and vote Gimel, or Rav Avadi Yosef says you have to go and vote Chas, everyone sees it as a mitzvah. And they do participate in the aspect of the state which they see which helps religion. They accept the money for mikvaot, for shuls, for yeshivot. On the other hand, Neturei Karta, they're not willing even to touch the money of the State of Israel. What is their taina? What is their reason for opposition against the State of Israel? Well, that you're not supposed to have a state in the land of Israel until the coming of Mashiach ben David. And you could say, on the one hand, that they're more kitzoni. They're a lot more extreme than Aguda. They're not going to vote in the elections. They're not going to go to the army. Some people of Aguda do go to the army. They don't even take the money from Bituach Lomi that you get for having kids. They don't take money for their yeshivot. So they're more extreme, but you could say that they're more ikvi, consistent. Right? We don't want to give to the state. We don't want to take from the state. That's the Neturei Karta. Agudat Yisrael, one of the complaints against them is that how are you willing to take from the state, but you're not willing to give to the state? Most of them don't serve in the army. Many of them don't pay taxes, etc., etc. Okay, these are the two points of opposition. Just to clarify, you should know that by far most Haredim are in the first group and not in the second group. Neturei Karta is a very small number. In America, you probably know them as the Satmar Hasidim. You all know the Satmar. Also, they're not big in numbers, but you hear them. Those are those who, at least they used to protest against Israel in the United Nations. They still do that. Protest against Israel on Yom HaTzmaut or things like that. Okay. Now, so we have the Rambam apparently says that having independence is important. On the other hand, we see that there are those that oppose that we've seen till now. But let's go back and look at the Rambam. I imagine most of you have learned with Rebbeim who have, I don't know if they learned with Rav Soloveitchik. By your age, they probably learned by Rebbeim who learned by Rav Soloveitchik, right? Am I correct? So when I was growing up, when I was your age in America, all my Rebbeim learned with Rav Soloveitchik. He was the Rav in America. Is he still, when you say the Rav in America, you mean Rav Soloveitchik? Even though it's one generation later, but okay. Now, the chidush of Brisk and the beauty of Brisk, and that's what turned me on to Gemara in 10th grade, is to learn how to learn a Rambam. Right? And by this time of the year, I imagine most of you guys know that the Rambam says at least as much in between the lines as in the lines themselves. So let's see the last sentence of the Rambam. I'm going to read the last sentence again, and I'm going to ask you to please be sensitive to a word that the Rambam didn't need to mention even once. And here, he goes out of his way to mention it twice. Okay? Gavru b'nei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gdolim v'haragum v'oshiu Yisrael mi-adam v'emidu melech min ha-kohanim. Anybody catch it?
Kohanim.
Why does the Rambam mention not once? If he mentioned it once, it would have been irrelevant. The fact that he mentions it twice, and it was irrelevant the first time, obviously means darshani. Why does the Rambam go out of his way to point out that the Maccabees were Kohanim, and they set up a king from the Kohanim? What is the halachic ramification of having a king who's from the Kohanim? Is that good or bad?
Bad.
Why?
Because it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be
Yehuda. Oh. The Rambam is of the opinion, is very machmir on the issue. The Ramban says it's an Isser Darabanan, but the Rambam, I never know what Sfarim you have here, so I usually photocopy them, just so I shouldn't have to schlep. The Ramban says it's an Isser Darabanan. Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda. Yaakov Avinu said that the king always has to be from Shevet Yehuda, but it's not Isser Doraita. The Rambam, and that's what we're learning here, says that it's Asur Midoraita. Let me read it for you. In Mitzvat Lotase Shin Samech Bet, it's one of the last Mitzvot Lotase, on the Pasuk Lotasim Alecha Ish Nochri. You all know that there's a Mitzvah Doraita of some Tasim Alecha Melech to have a king. The Mitzvah Lotase is Lotasim Alecha Ish Nochri. Now, what's the pshat? How do most of the parshanim explain ishnof? How would you explain ishnofri? You're not allowed to have a non-Jewish king. That's the pshat. The Rambam takes it further. In the Sefer HaMitzvot, he says, Kvar yadata misifrei nevua shezecha ba David v'chin zaro acharav ad sof kol adorot en melech lemi sheyamin torat Moshe adon kol hanevi'im. Getting carried away here, if you noticed, right? If you believe in Moshe, the greatest of all prophets, and you don't believe this, you're a kofar. Ela mizera Shlomo Levad. You have to, not only has to be from Shevet Yehuda, it has to be from David. Not only from David, it can't be Adoniyahu, it can't be Avshalom, it has to be from Shlomo. V'chol mishehu mizulat ze hazera hanichbad linyan malchut nochri karina be. If you're not from the right family, you are over the love of Lotasim Alecha Ish Nochri. The Maccabees were over on the Isur Deoraita. And even more so, he goes out of his way, he gives a dugma, an example. Kamosha calls Zera Acher, Bilti Zera Aharon, Li'inyan Avoda, Zar Karina Be. If David HaMelech would want to give a korban in place of a Kohen, what's his din? Hazar HaKarev Yumat. Right? Even David HaMelech, he's Jewish. He's the king. But regarding the Kuna, he's called a Zar. Regarding the Malchut, says the Rambam, to the same extent, a Kohen is called a Zar. Adkan Sefer HaMitzvot. If so, why does the Rambam stress twice in Hilchot Chanukah? He says, we celebrate the fact that sovereignty, independence returned to Am Yisrael. What's he saying? Even though they were Kohanim, even though the state was not the ideal state that we would like to have it, as a matter of fact, it was Asur, in his opinion, Deoraita, nevertheless, we celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. And the modern ramifications are very clear. Go with me. Now, if that's not enough, the Rambam adds on another point. The Rambam says, we celebrate Shechazra Malchut LiYisrael Yeter Al Matayim Shanim. We celebrate that the Malchut, the independent, the sovereignty, returned to Israel for more than 200 years. Chevra, the Rambam is not a history book. And you all know very well that the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchot Purim doesn't tell the story of Purim. In the beginning of Hilchot Pesach, he doesn't tell the story of Pesach. All of a sudden here, he tells the story of Chanukah. Now, you could say, well, there's no Megillah at Chanukah. Pesach, we know, the story from the Torah. Purim, we have the Megillah. But why does he have to go into such details? Right? You want to say that the Malchut lasted for a long time? Say a long time. You want to say a short time? Say a short time. You want to say that it was temporary? Say it was temporary. Why does he go into details that it lasted for more than 200 years? Why is that significant? Now here you have to know a little Jewish history. What was the Maccabean dynasty like during those 200 years? What do you know about the Maccabean kings? Sorry?
It was ugly.
It was? Ugly. It was bad news. Right? You know, even if you never heard anything about it, just look at their names. Aristobulus, Alexander, Hyrcanus. You know what? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us, how does the Rambam get to 200 It's 206 years. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that Yehuda and their grandchildren, they were king for 103 years of the Maccabean dynasty. Then it says Herod, Antipatros, you know the story of Herod? He wasn't even Jewish, right? He claimed to be Jewish. He claimed to convert. Won't get into what exactly happened there. But you only get to 200 years if you include the Herodian dynasty. You all with me? In other words, is the Rambam celebrating the Herodian dynasty? The answer is yeah, because otherwise you don't get to 200 years. Now, even the 103 years of the Maccabean dynasty, again, the names, Hyrcanus, Alexander, Aristobulus, what are these names? In other words, they were Hellenists. The sons of Matityahu were religious. Yehuda, Yochanan, Yonatan, Shimon, the four brothers who were kings, and all of them were killed, and one after the other, they were all, well, obviously, tzaddikim. But their children, if you look after the first 40 years, the Maccabean dynasty was bad news. So why is the Rambam celebrating it? Now, if you want to say, well, maybe the Rambam... Shalom Gavi. Maybe the Rambam didn't know history. Maybe he didn't know history. You can't say that. How do I know? Because the Rambam, in his Perush Mishnayot, the Masechet Yoma, do you remember the first Perek in Yoma, where it talks about the Kohen Gadol? The night before of Yom Kippur, the Sanhedrin would review with him the laws of the Avodah on the Kohen. So the Rambam asks, how could you have a Kohen Gadol who doesn't know how to give a Korban? He doesn't know the Avodah? Answers the Rambam, and this is in his Perush Mishnayot, it's Masechet Yoma, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel. B'migdash, aval b'migdash sheni, shayubo kol inyanim biltim ushlamim. You don't have this on your sheets. During the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, everything was bad news. Kamoshi adata, like it's known. V'amalachim lo hayu holchim lifinei ha-mesoret ha-yishara. The kings, as is known, did not follow the Jewish tradition. Most of the 200 years of the Maccabean dynasty, they weren't religious. Nevertheless, says the Rambam, we still celebrate Yom HaTzmaut. We still celebrate having an independent Jewish state because it's so important to have a Jewish state even though it's not ideal. Now, even though for most of the... Again, did everyone catch the second point? The Rambam doesn't say we celebrate 40 years of a religious state. He says we celebrate 200 years even though he himself realizes that there were a lot of problems. Okay? Even though it was non-religious. Now, to summarize what we've seen till now, basically, in case you didn't catch it, ironically, the two problems that the Haredim have today with the secular state of Israel are the same two problems that we have with the Maccabean dynasty. You don't like the state because it's non-religious. Well, neither were the Maccabees during most of the 200 years. And nevertheless, the Rambam goes out of his way to say, we still celebrate it. You're waiting for Mashiach ben David because the king is supposed to be from Shevet Yehuda. Hello, the Maccabees also were Kohanim, just like they were non-religious. So ironically, what the Rambam is telling us is that there's a very clear takdim, precedent. Right? Whenever you have a modern question, you always have to look for a halachic or historic precedent. There's a very clear precedent of how to relate to a non-religious state. And basically, in a sentence, what we've seen till now, quick review for, not Matis, Tzvi. If you don't want to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut, so don't celebrate Hanukkah either. But if you do celebrate Hanukkah, then you should be celebrating Yom HaTzmaut as well. But the question is, why is it so important to have a state, even if it's non-religious? You give me another... We got a little late start. Do we have another 5-10 minutes? Yeah? No, I was just told today that it's going to be 6:45. Generally, it'll be from 6:45 to 7:30. I pashut, I didn't know. I see. Many of you didn't know. Actually, nobody knew. I appreciate everyone, you know, leaving whatever you were doing and coming. So you want to do another 5-10 minutes?
Until 6:45?
Yeah, something like that.
So we have...
What?
I don't know, it's usually 6:45. We have until 6:45.
Today? No, I'm asking you what... I don't want to ruin your plans or your chavrut.
You're asking how much you want to do. Well,
yeah, okay. Okay, let's see, let's deal with the question why. Why is it so important to have an independent Jewish state? So let's look again back at the Rambam, once we're learning the Rambam. What were the problems, right, if we want to deal with why? Why is it so important to have a Jewish state, even if it's not ideal, and even if it's halachically problematic? What were the problems that the Rambam mentioned at the beginning? Let's go over it again. בבית שני, כשמלכי יוון גזרו גזרות על ישראל, וביטלו דתם ולא הניחו אותם לעסוק בתורה ומצוות. What's the problem when you don't have a Jewish state that the Rambam's pointing out here? Right? There's a problem of freedom of religion. Right? Point number one, even if Herod doesn't want to be religious, even if Aristobulus or Hyrcanus doesn't want to be religious, or Ben-Gurion doesn't want to be religious, but you want to be religious, you can be. Right? There's the idea of freedom of religion. Now, for us today, this seems like a very simple and pashut elementary right, growing up in America. And it sounds, you know, like back from the Dark Ages that, you know, who doesn't give freedom of religion? But... when I was your age, until 1989, there was a large percentage of the world where it was asur to be Shomer Shabbat. What superpower am I talking about? The Soviet Union. Right? They didn't let you do Brit Milah. They didn't let you put a mezuzah on the door. They didn't let you learn Torah. And it's hard to believe that in the 20th century, in the modern world, you had a superpower who went out of their way to prohibit shechita or brit milah or things like this. Nevertheless, we see that it could be. On the other hand, today, there is freedom of religion in the Soviet Union. As a matter of fact, there's even freedom of religion in Iran. If you want to do a brit milah, if you want to keep kosher, you want to put on tefillin in Iran, they don't have a problem with that. As a matter of fact, today, there's probably freedom of religion everywhere in the world. If so, does that mean we don't need a Jewish state anymore? The answer, let's see together a very interesting igeret of the Rambam in source 2. The Rambam is talking here about the importance of living in a Jewish state. Afilu hayu shtei medinot mi Yisrael. Even if there are two states of Israel, which sounds bizarre. Although historically there was. When were there two Jewish states? Yafeh. Right? When Yeravam ben Nevat split the Malchut, so he had two Jewish states. The Rambam is saying, theoretically, say there are two Jewish states. Achat men yoter tova b'maaseh v'min al goteha. V'yoter medagdeket v'nichnat l'mitzvot min acheret. Say there are two Jewish states, and one of them is more religious than the other. Shechayav yirei Hashem, God-fearing Jew is obligated latzet me'otah shema'aseh inam kol kach nechonim le'otah medina tova. If there are two Jewish states, you have an obligation in living in the one which is more Jewish. Jump down four lines. Aval, that's talking about if there are two Jewish states. V'chol zeh kishyu shtei medinot Yisrael. Aval im haya makom min agoyim. If a person is living in a non-Jewish state, Yisrael ha'omed sham, a Jew who's living there, al achat kama v'kama shu chayav latzet me'oto makom v'lalechet l'makom tov. You have to leave the non-Jewish state and go and move to the Jewish state. And here the Rambam is saying, even if there is freedom of religion, because he's dealing with the opposite problem. What problem do we have today in the world where there is too much freedom of religion? in America, for example? Assimilation. Right? In other words, all galuyot, if you look in Jewish history, all galuyot are either a problem of that they don't give us freedom of religion, or if they do give us freedom of religion, there's the problem of assimilation. By the way, Rav Kook had a beautiful vort on the Pasuk. You all know it's from the Navi, from Yeshayahu, but we all know it from the Tefillah. Vaya bayom ahu yitaka b'shofar gadol, uvau ha'uvdim be'eretz Ashur, v'nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, v'yishtachavu la'ashem b'hara kodesh, b'Yerushalayim. You all know the song? If you don't know the Pasuk, at least you know the song, right? Rav Kook said, asked a very interesting question. What is the talk about uvau ha'uvdim be'eretz Ashur, those who were lost in the land of Ashur? Ashur is Assyria. V'nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, those who were outcast in the land of Egypt, and they will all come back in Kibbutz Galiot and serve Hashem in Yerushalayim. Why does the Pasuk only talk about Egypt and Ashur? What about the Jews from Bavel? What about the Jews from Australia? What about the Jews from America? They're not going to come back in Kibbutz Galiot? Sorry? No, Rav Kook says that the Navi here is talking about a prototype. There are two prototypes of Galut. One is Ashur, and the other is Mitzrayim. Ashur is written Aleph, Shin, Vav, Resh. What is Ashur? What is the word Osher, Aleph, Vav, Shin, Resh in Hebrew mean? Ashrei Yoshvei, happy. Ashrei Yoshvei V'techa, right? So there are those Galuyot which are called Ashur. The Galuyot of happiness. On the other hand, there are galuyot which are called Mitzrayim. From the Shoresh?
Tsar.
Tsaris. Tsarot. Troubles. These are the two types. There are only two types of galut. Where we either have the problems of too much happiness, where there, in Ashur, what are the Jews called in the Pasuk? What does the Navi call the Jews? Ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur. What is ovdim with an aleph? Those who are lost in the land of happiness. That's what's called assimilation, right? On the other hand, those who are in the galuyot of Mitzrayim, of Tsarot, of troubles, what are they called?
Nidachim.
What does Nidachim mean? The outcasts. In other words, all Jews throughout galut history were either outcasts in lands of Tzarot, where they wouldn't let them do the mitzvot, or they, like today, we have the opposite problem. Kibbutz Galuyot, the Navi tells us, is going to bring back also the Jews from the Soviet Union, and also the Jews from America, and everyone is going to come back. What the Rambam is saying is something very interesting. I don't know if you caught it. If the idea of one of the ideas, we'll see next week that there are more ideas, but if one of the ideas of why it's so important to celebrate having a Jewish state is to solve the problem of assimilation. According to that, even if the Jewish state would be in Uganda, we would have to live there. As a matter of fact, you all know the story of the Kuzari? Right? How do we know of the story of the Kuzari? Said Rabbi Yehuda Alevi wrote it down 800 years ago. The story happened 1,300 years ago, about the year 750 CE. Does anybody know how we know the story? There's an Igeret of Rav Chasdai ibn Shifrut. Heard of Rav Chasdai ibn Shifrut? Rav Chasdai ibn Shifrut was from the period of the Gaonim. And he wrote a letter to the king of the Khazars about the year 1000. Because you all know the story of the Khuzari, right? That the king was looking for the real religion. He knew that paganism was foolish. So he invited a Christian priest and a Muslim Qadi. Neither of them were able to prove the truth of their religion. And then he invited a Jew. He was convinced. And not only did he convert to Judaism, but all of the Khazars converted to Judaism. Now, Rav Chasda ibn Shifrut heard this rumor in Spain that there is this Jewish state in the land of the Khazars. And he writes in his Igeret as follows. He writes to the king of the Khazars, and he wants to know more details. Ve'ilu yadati ki nachon adavar, if I would know that it's true that there is this Jewish state in the land of the Khazars, hayti mo'ez v'chvodi, vozev gdulati, vayti holech mihar el giva b'yam u'b'yabasha, ad b'wi el makom. I would leave Spain. You can't come to Israel because there's no economy, there's no water. We're talking 1,000 years ago. But he said, all Jews will want to move to the land of the Khazars. Why? To solve the problem of assimilation. In other words, where there is a Jewish state, there is going to be a conducive Jewish atmosphere. Now, I don't know if you guys appreciate this. Let me tell you something that happened to me once. I was, some of the guys know I live in Kofel HaShachar, and I teach in Orot. And so I pass Ariel, where I live. It's a small yeshuv. And on Purim, you know, obviously they sell some costumes, but my son wanted to be a tiger, and there was no tiger costume in Kolchav HaShachar. So my wife asked me to pick up a tiger costume in Ariel. It's the big city in the Shomron. So I go to a toy store in Ariel, and there I have the opposite problem. There are 5 different types of tigers. There's a yellow tiger, and an orange tiger, and a ferocious tiger, and a smiling tiger. So I call up my wife and ask her, what type of tiger does he want to dress as? So she says, I don't know, I'll ask him. So I hang up. She goes looking for my son, and I'm just, you know, just sitting there. And in the aisle next to me, I hear a Russian kid arguing with his parents. He was talking Hebrew, and they were answering him in Russian. So I caught half of the conversation. Apparently, he wanted to buy this costume for Purim. And his parents told him that it cost too much money. So the kid answered him in Hebrew. He said, Ima, atzricha liklot, zot medina yehudit. Ani lo yachol liyot hayeled hayachid bakita shelo chogeget Purim. Right? Ima, get it. This is a Jewish state. I can't be the only kid in the class who doesn't celebrate Purim. And I don't know if you ever thought about it, but assimilation, if we think of terms of ideas, good, bad, if you were to ask any Jew, we would say assimilation is what, good or bad? Yeah. It's bad. Does that mean that God made a mistake when he created assimilation? Right, God doesn't make mistakes. So there must be a positive assimilation. Do you all catch what we're saying? In the context of a Jewish state, assimilation is something very good. Where you take a Jew who never ate kosher in his life, never observed Shabbat in his life, never lit Nerot Chanukah in his life, never fasted on Yom Kippur in his life, doesn't have a mezuzah, didn't do anything. You bring him on Aliyah to the Jewish state, and here he doesn't break milah because he doesn't want to be laughed at when he goes to the army and takes a shower. Right? He lights Nerot Chanukah because that's the culture. He observes Purim because that's what everyone does. He eats kosher because that's what you have at the supermarket. In other words, and by the way, this is statistically very interesting, because with the fall of the Soviet Union in 1989 and the aliyah of 1.2 million Jews from the Soviet Union, I don't know if you people realize that there was 0% religious coming about Aliyah from the Soviet Union. I was on Shlichut for a month in Minsk, and out of the entire city of Minsk, of 60,000 Jews, there were 2 religious Jews, 2 Chabadnikim, who were Bali Tshuva, and I wouldn't eat in their house because they didn't know anything about anything. But what's the percentage 2 out of 60,000? That's 0%. 0% of the Jews coming from the Soviet Union have Brit Milah. 0% know anything about Judaism. They come on Aliyah, and all of a sudden, they start observing mitzvot because they assimilate into the Jewish state. Do you all see what I mean? Assimilation isn't a mistake by God. Peer pressure is something which is meant to be positive. But we, myself included, growing up in America, we always saw assimilation as negative, negative, and negative. Which it is. But in Israel, you're going to marry a Jew just because everyone else is Jewish. I don't know if you people realize statistically, the OU, I want to finish up, the OU did a very extensive survey in the United States about the percentage of Jews who are observant and the number who become non-observant. And it's unbelievable. If we had time, I'd ask you to take an educated guess. Maybe I'll just ask. How many Orthodox Jews do you think there are in America?
5%?
It's 6%, but numerically, how much does that come out to be? If you take Chabad and Neturei Karta and modern Orthodox and Zionists and Nazid, all the Orthodox, anybody who considers themselves Orthodox. 378,000. There are only 378,000 Orthodox Jews in America. Now, if you work that out statistically, Jews in America are 2%. Only 6% of the 2% are Orthodox. Now, out of the 6% who are raised Orthodox, 56% leave. In other words, one out of every two, most, 56%, most of those who grow up Orthodox in America don't stay that way. Now, I didn't believe the statistic, just like I see on your faces that you don't believe it. But about 10 years ago, I was back in the States on a lecture tour, and I was in Riverdale, in New York, where I grew up. Made a couple of phone calls, tried to get in touch with guys who I grew up with. And out of the 10 friends who I grew up with, we beat the odds. 6 of the 10 were still religious, but 4 weren't. And the problem is, and that's what the Rambam is saying, when you're living in a non-Jewish state, the problem of intermarriage and assimilation and negative peer pressure, being like everyone else, that's a natural phenomenon. There's a clue in sociology where there's a dislike of the unlike. You ever hear that? There's a dislike of the unlike. If everyone is black, they don't like the whites. If everyone is white, they don't like the blacks. And that's why Jews don't like, or nobody likes to stand out. We want to be like everyone else. And that's the problem of assimilation. When you're living in a non-Jewish state, the percentages of assimilation are unbelievable. Again, 56% don't stay Orthodox. Within Israel, it's 15% don't stay Orthodox, which is more than twice as good. Now, even if, chas v'shalom, 15%, hold on, say your kid takes off his kippah, at least he's going to continue fasting on Yom Kippur and lighting Ner on Chanukah and have a mezuzah and do Brit Milah, because that's what everyone's doing. And if he doesn't become a Baal Tshuva, at least your grandchildren are Jewish and they'll become Baal Tshuva. In other words, within the framework of a Jewish state, even if somebody decides not to be religious, the framework of a Jewish atmosphere keeps everyone close to home. I'll finish with two quick stories. Number one, when I was in the army, we had a guy in our, that was right when the Russian Jews first started coming on Aliyah. And we had a Russian in our platoon. And he was the laughing stock of the platoon. Why? Because he didn't have a Brit Milah. Now, unfortunately, we usually, for many 2,000 years, had the opposite problem. Where in Chutz La'aretz, they laugh at you if you do have a Brit Milah. And here's just an example. If I have to choose between, obviously you're not supposed to laugh at anybody for anything, right? But that's the way people are. If I have to choose between living in a place where they laugh at you if you have a Brit Milah, or if they laugh at you if you don't have a Brit Milah, that's not a difficult choice. And that's why the Rambam says you have to live in a Jewish state, even if it were to be in Uganda. The final story, Bedidi Havyuvda, growing up in Riverdale, used to play at K-Pak. Nobody here is from Riverdale, is there? No. There's a K-Pak park. And everyone plays there, Irish, Italian, Jews. And there was a guy there named Davy Ferranti, an Italian kid, who never really spoke with him, but there was one summer where it was raining in the morning, and in the afternoon, just he and I showed up, so we played one-on-one. And how long can you play one-on-one? Well, so we sat down to rest. And the first time we ever talked with him, and we were talking, what do you want to be when you grow up? What does your father do? So I said, my father's a rabbi. You know what a rabbi is? He's an Italian kid. So Franti says, of course I do. My great-grandfather was a rabbi. So I say, Franti, your great-grandfather couldn't be a rabbi. He says, my great-grandfather was a famous rabbi. I said, but you're not Jewish. He says, I swear. Anyway, I bet him $1 that his great-grandfather was not a rabbi. So I said, okay, prove it. So we go home, and he says to his mother, Mom, where's the picture of your grandfather, the rabbi? So I thought she would laugh. She doesn't laugh. She goes over to the closet, gets on a chair, takes down an album, starts thumbing through a bunch of old black and white pictures, and she comes to a picture of, I saw it upside down, of a rabbi with a beard and payas. And she said, this was my grandfather. And I was in shock. But then she turned it around, and I recognized it was the same picture of the Chafetz Chaim that we had in our sukkah. I said, the Chafetz Chaim? She said, yeah, that's what they called him. The Chafetz Chaim has a great-grandson who everybody thinks is Italian, named Davy Ferranti, with hair down to his shoulders, who has more yichus than probably everyone in the room put together. But the problem when you're living in a non-Jewish state, the problem of intermarriage, gets into the best of families. I don't know about your families. In my family, even though we come from a religious family on both sides, most of my cousins are not, actually on one side they're not religious, on the other side they're not Jewish. There are almost no Jews on the Levine side. It's Levine, right? They're Levine. They're not Jewish. All the cousins intermarried. And to summarize, what the Rambam is saying is that even if you're going to live under Herod, and even if you're going to live under Aristobulus or Hyrcanus, and a non-religious state of Kohanim, a problematic state, nevertheless, it's still, we celebrate it on Hanukkah. Why? Because it prevents the problem of assimilation. Because we have a Jewish state with a Jewish atmosphere. And we'll continue next time. Oh, sorry.
Time to go past that.
Nothing's personal. What's your name?